Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
Red Bull and Ritalin kind of day. Any announcements we need to make?
Just a reminder that we will be visiting Los Angeles here towards the end of the month, March 24th from 3 to 7 p.m. Pacific time at Idle Hour. So hopefully some of you will be there. We'll also be visiting St. Paul, Minnesota in June. So if you need to know about these events, head over to our Facebook events page.
We'll also be at CrimeCon, and if you haven't bought tickets yet, go out to their site and use the code GENY. Also, there is a new convention coming up in New Orleans called Podern Love, and we'll be going to that one also. Go out, check out the details. I'll have more details later, so I don't have them in front of me right now.
If you're a podcast fan, that one will be an amazing event because they'll have podcasters from all sorts of genres.
And it's the good folks over at Podcasts We Listen To that are organizing it.
Yeah, look them up on Facebook.
So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about a young girl by the name of Lee Ochi. Why don't you give the listeners a summary, Justin?
It was August 21st, 1992. So this is a little bit before I graduated high school. Tupelo, Mississippi. Hurricane Andrew had just made landfall. It had actually strafed across Florida, come up the Gulf and hit Louisiana, and then spiraled out over Mississippi and Alabama. Vicki Yarbrough was the mother of Lee Maureen Ochi. She went to work that morning, as she normally would do, and was a little concerned about the weather, being the Hurricane Andrew was over their heads. And she called back home to check on Lee, who did not answer the phone. She got greatly concerned and left work, drove home to check on her daughter. She found the garage door was open. The house was unlocked. There were signs of a struggle. There was a blood trail leading down the hallway to the living room and out the back of the house. This concerns her mother very much, and she will call 911. Lee Ochi will never be seen again.
So it's a missing persons case that may actually be a murder case.
Yeah, I call this a murder case, but they haven't found a body. Also, typically when there's a case such as this where there is signs of a struggle, the police and the investigators will look at the amount of blood or just things like maybe there's a bullet stuck in the wall and they'll see if there's, you know, soft tissue on that bullet to determine whether or not a murder occurred. Now, in this case, there is blood. There is signs of an assault or some sort of fight happening, but is it enough blood that the person died? Well, that's questionable.
And we also don't know the circumstances of this incident. So it could be that if Lee was attacked, that she was struck in a way where she didn't even get to struggle, though. I mean, we have evidence of blood, but we don't really have any other evidence apart from that and then the blood trail. But we can get into that evidence later.
Yeah.
Let's start at the beginning. Where did Lee come from, right?
Lee Ochi was born August 21st, 1979. Just a few years after me. Lee was 13 years old at the time of this disappearance. Her parents got a divorce when she was less than 1 year old, and her father, Donald, was a military man, so he didn't see his daughter much, but they did keep in touch. He would end up serving 24 years in the Army, so he was always moving around. Lee's mother, Vicky, left the military and moved to Tupelo. Donald, a master sergeant, was stationed in Virginia when Lee disappeared.
Yeah, the couple, they had actually met in the military, so they knew that life well, but it didn't take long for that relationship to sour, unfortunately. Donald has said that he was really looking forward to having a family. That was his dream, but it just didn't work out with Lee's mother.
They describe Lee as very smart, sweet girl. She was a daddy's girl. She liked to hang out with him. He showed her how to shoot and I think ride ATVs and stuff. They were kind of outdoorsy. She was your typical teenager. She liked pizza, dogs, and she had blonde hair, hazel eyes, and she was about to begin the eighth grade.
Yeah, she really liked hanging out with her dad because their personalities went very well together, from what I understand. I guess the other thing would be she didn't get to see him very often. So when they did get to see each other, they tried to make the most of it. And that's why we have stories of them riding ATVs or shooting together. I think, you know, that difficulty of having that military life and not seeing your daughter very often, it meant that Donald had to make phone calls to his daughter. That's really how they spent a lot of their time together, was on the phone. And from what I understand, he would call her once or twice a month. So this went on for years. And sometime before Lee's disappearance, she actually did spend a month in Germany with her father. By his account, they had a great time.
Let's go to the day of and what happened.
So you had mentioned Hurricane Andrew. And at the time, that had dominated the news. If you just skim over this case, you might get this idea that there's this monster of a hurricane bearing down on Mississippi. But really, by the time it got to Mississippi, it was just causing a lot of rain, right?
Well, it was a pretty severe thunderstorm. I'm not going to downplay it as not severe, but it wasn't a hurricane any longer. It was spinning out. It does cause tornadoes, and so I'm sure they were on a tornado watch. Even in 2015, we had I don't remember which hurricane it was, but it made it all the way up here to Kansas City. But by the time it got to us, it was just a bad thunderstorm. So I think it was probably still raining really hard down there, very windy, but...
So a tropical storm.
Yeah, yeah.
But still something people should be aware of.
Yeah.
And according to Vicky Yarbrough, her daughter, Lee, was pretty afraid of storms. They made her anxious.
I love storms myself, but I get it. People, they don't trust the weather, and they think that a tornado or something's going to come down and suck their house up, and then they're going to end up in Wizard of Oz or something.
Yeah, my mother loves storms. I've always been a little wary of them. It's like I am impressed by them, but I'm also very wary. And my mother, she loves to sit out and watch the storm come through. So everyone's a little different. But of course, this is Lee's mother saying that her daughter was afraid of the storm. And so the night before, she said that Lee slept with her. probably to help her sleep better. She had that comfort of knowing her mother was right there with her. But there was something about August 27th that was a little different, and that's that she planned to leave her daughter at home for a number of hours until her grandmother could pick her up.
And this is, according to Vicky, one of the first times she's ever left Lee home alone. She's a 13-year-old girl. I guess I was left home alone a lot more by that age, but this is according to Vicky.
Yeah, I think she said this was the first time. One of the things that she mentions is that she had a secret ring. Can you describe what that is? I mean, I'm sure most people know what that is, but describe what that whole situation is.
Well, this is in a time before cell phones and caller ID and all that good stuff. And this is something I did with my friends and my girlfriends at the time. You call the number, you let it ring twice, and then you hang up, and then you call right back. That way they know it's you who's calling. And if you had multiple people that did secret rings, well, somebody else would make it ring once, hang up, and then call right back. Another person might make it ring three times, hang up, and then call back, because you didn't want to answer a phone call if you didn't know who it was. So this is the arrangement that she had with her mother: ring twice, hang up, call back. So her mother gets up at 6:45 a.m. that morning. She says that they had breakfast together and discussed going to the open house at Lee's middle school that she was going to, and that they were going to go to Taco Bell for dinner, because Taco Bell is where you have a fabulous dinner with your family. Vicky says she left around 7:40 a.m. to go to work, and then she called home using the secret ring at around 8:30. She says that she was worried because there was a tornado watch in the area. For those of you that don't live in the Midwest, there's tornado watch and then a tornado warning, meaning there is a possibility that a tornado could be forming in the area, or the conditions are right for a tornado. But Lee doesn't answer the phone when she calls. And at this point, Vicky's grown concerned, and she wants to leave work, go home, and check on her daughter. There are some reports, though, that she actually called the grandmother to go check on Lee also. But regardless, she ends up leaving work, driving home, getting home. You know, obviously, it takes her less than 20 minutes to drive to work. So she gets home at around 8:45. She finds that the garage door is open and the garage light is on, which that indicates that it had just been opened, because the lights are usually on a, you know, like a 5-minute timer or something like that. So whoever just left had been there just moments before. The door was unlocked, and she went into the house, called for Lee, searched for her daughter. She didn't get a response, and that's when she comes across the blood. There's spatter on the wall and a small pool of blood on the floor outside of Lee's bedroom. She checks the backyard, and they have like a tool shed out there. She calls 911 at around 9 a.m. I'm just going to throw it out there now. Some people have a problem with it taking her 10 plus minutes to call 911. I don't know what the correct time frame is for somebody to call 911 when they come home and their daughter's not there. I don't know if it's 30 seconds or if it's 30 minutes, but it was over 10 minutes before she calls 911.
Well, I think what people would have a problem with is if you're looking around and can't find your daughter, then maybe you keep looking. But if you're looking around and don't see her, but you find blood spatter on the wall, and you find a pool of blood on the floor, then yeah, maybe you should be calling immediately.
Yeah. Detectives come out to the house. One of the detectives, he is trying to find any indication of Lee and the injuries she sustained. They couldn't tell how bad it was from the blood, but from the door frame, it looks like somebody has smashed her head up against the door. It's at about 5 feet, so this is Lee's height. So they know it was her, and it's her head,
yes.
Or more than likely.
Yeah, she stood 4'10", so it's probably Lee, the missing young girl, who was injured at this doorframe.
There was evidence that somebody had tried to clean the blood, and in the bathroom, it looks like they were trying to wash their hands of blood. They also found a bloody nightgown in the laundry basket or the hamper for dirty clothes.
What it showed was it appeared as though the blood had fallen down on the nightgown, right? Like dripped or streamed down onto the nightgown.
It could have been that she was wearing it, suffered a head wound, and it dripped down on it, or the nightgown was on the floor and somebody was bleeding upon it. There wasn't any DNA testing at this time. We're talking early 90s. So all they have is blood type testing. They check the type. It's type O. And they say that Lee was type O. So this is her blood. Or that's the determination they're making.
Yeah. If you take the height of which the spatter was at and the blood type, which was Lee's, then it seems like, yeah, that's a good educated guess that this was Lee who was injured and now she's missing.
Police lock down the neighborhood, but they don't really lock down the house or the crime scene. They do bring in bloodhounds and they're trying to catch a scent from the back door, see if they can find where this perpetrator or possibly Lee has run off to or been carried to. The dogs aren't catching a scent, but you have to realize that it's pouring rain. It is storming out. So I have a lot of faith in the dogs. I think they can find people. I think they can smell through the rain. But if it's raining that hard, if that person, suspect or victim, was not in that area very long, I'm sure that it could be washed away pretty quickly. The dogs also do not catch scents on Vicky's car at the home.
At least as far as we know. Also, they asked Vicky, what could your daughter be wearing? Because as far as the mother knew, she was wearing the nightgown, but that was left in the home. And then she said there were some clothes missing. And the clothes that were missing just happened to be clothes that she had gotten for her recent birthday. She had received a pair of blue jeans, some underwear, and a shirt. There was also a sleeping bag missing from the home. And the way I understand it is that Vicky was such a neat freak, as they call it, that things were in their place. And so it was easy to look around and see if something was missing. And the sleeping bags were arranged, I guess, in a row of some kind. So when one was missing, it was obvious.
I found this very interesting because if my wife went missing and they asked what's missing from her clothes, I wouldn't have a clue. So her mom is very familiar with all of her clothing and all of her possessions to be able to give this level of detail.
They're going to arrange searches to try and look for Lee, and they needed to know what she could possibly be wearing in case someone catches sight of a young girl and they can look and see what kind of clothing she has on. But one important detail here at this point is that Vicky called her ex-husband, Donald Ochi, which is Lee's father. And according to Donald, Vicky calls and says that Lee has run away. Very strange, right, Justin?
I would think the blood evidence would dictate something else.
We're not sure why she said that to him, if that's what she said. But according to Donald, it took a number of days beyond that day. This is getting into September here, about mid-September, when she finally says to him that there was blood found in the home. And it's at that point when Donald Ochi, who's stationed in Virginia, says, "I'm coming to Tupelo." And he heads to Tupelo. The first thing he does is he talks to the police. He wants to know where the investigation is at, what's going on, because when he first heard that she had run away, to him, that was odd because he thought, no, she wouldn't run away, would she? But when he found out there was blood, now it's a criminal investigation. It has to be, right? So he's talking to the police, getting a gauge on what's been going on. I think at that point, he didn't understand why his wife would not tell him about the blood immediately. And maybe she would have an excuse for that or a reason. I don't know. But he got a late start on this because he was under the impression that she ran off. Maybe she had a fight with her mom and she didn't want to be at the house, so she ran off. But that's not what happened. There was blood in the home. He's helping to search for his daughter. The police contact the mother. They contact her husband, who's, I think they've split up because he wasn't living at the house. His name is Barney Yarbrough. And Barney is very cooperative with the police and even helps with the searches. It's during this time they get some polygraphs done. Correct, Justin?
Yeah, which everyone knows my low opinion of those. But Barney passes with flying colors. Donald, who we know was stationed miles and miles away, and he was in the military, so they got a lock on his position, passes with flying colors. Vicky not only fails one, but three polygraph tests at sensing deception.
Yeah, she takes one through the police, and then she has a couple more weeks later through the FBI, and each of these tests is conducted by a different examiner, and she fails all of them. At the time, this wasn't information that was released to the public, but later Vicky will talk about that, and she'll say that the reason she failed, she's not quite sure, but she said, if you have a missing daughter and they're hooking you up to a machine and asking you a bunch of questions, she doesn't know how you couldn't have a reaction. In other words, the examiners are looking for a change, right? They're looking for a reaction when they ask you certain questions. And if they ask you, what's your favorite color? And there's no response, then they ask you,
did you have anything to do with your daughter's disappearance?
Yeah. And if you have a reaction to that, then they start to see that you're reacting to questions that you should react to, but maybe the needle moves a lot, then maybe you're really nervous and you don't want to talk about it. But she's never really wanted to talk about it. And I'm not saying she was not cooperative with police, but out of all of the people that were close to Lee, who they were talking with, she seemed to be the one with the most reservation.
They're also doing searches, the wooded areas around Tupelo. They have a hotline set up for anyone can call in and give leads. 8 days after the disappearance, Philip Copeland is working at a McDonald's. He's running the drive-through, and he sees a truck come through that has an older black gentleman and a younger girl who he thinks looks like Lee. So he reports this to the police, who are actually able to track down the truck, the driver, and the girl in the truck, and it wasn't Lee.
But at first, it seemed like a great lead. Like, maybe she's okay, maybe she's alive, but yeah, it's not Lee.
There was another sighting of a man walking down the street with a female. The man was wearing a hoodie, and he wasn't making eye contact with anybody, and he was pulling the girl in close to him. And it's said that the girl looked a little bit like Lee or a younger woman, whereas the man was wearing like a military jacket with a scruffy beard. He looked out of place with this person, but nothing ever came of that sighting. But then a package shows up, right?
Right. And this is in September of 92. An envelope arrives that's addressed to B. Yarbrough, but it shows up at Vicky's house. And inside this package, Lee's eyeglasses.
So whoever has taken her has mailed her reading glasses back to the home. It's the letter B and the last name. And then it's to Honey Locust, but Honey is misspelled. And it's H-O-N-Y.
The address of her home.
Of course, the FBI gets a hold of this. It has double the postage that it needed to get mailed. They find that whoever mailed it used water on the back of the stamps and not saliva. They're not able to do much with this, but they know that it's been mailed from Boonville, which isn't too far away.
Yeah, the police had wanted the FBI to look at it because if they were going to get any evidence, they would be the best people to look for it. And there just wasn't anything to get. The eyeglasses didn't have any evidence. And like you said, Justin, the stamps were wet with water. They know that. Even though they didn't have the means, you know, the for testing DNA, they were still trying to collect whatever evidence they could. What do you think about these eyeglasses being mailed like that?
I would just assume if it was somebody wanting ransom, there would have been some sort of message in there. If it's somebody that's trying to terrify the family, well, all they got were eyeglasses. They didn't get any follow-up letters or phone calls, nothing. So I think we can determine that whoever took Lee mailed these eyeglasses, but why just that?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So let's sort of stop and look back at what we have here. A 13-year-old girl who was left at home for apparently the first time. And this looks like an abduction, right? Although there is blood in the home, so she must have been attacked. Although we don't know if this is a murder because there isn't quite enough blood in the home to say it was murder, but there had to have been a serious injury. There's no sign of any kind of a break-in. And as Justin already described, the garage door was up, the light was on, and a door was unlocked. So access to the house was there. If you listen to the mother, Vicky, she makes it seem like the only way someone got in that house was if Lee let them in. So she's concerned it was someone they knew and trusted.
Vicky also makes one statement that she doesn't remember if she closed the garage door when she left, which I guess would possibly give somebody access to the house if the inside door wasn't locked. Being that this is a semi-small town, big case, it's all over the headlines, it's all over the news. Rumors are running abound. There's some crazy rumor that there's a local doctor that did this and has buried Lee on his property. This rumor picks up so much steam that the police are actually talking about it. But the police chief at the time, he doesn't really like rumors. So he institutes a gag order on all of the officers, and any police officer that wasn't actively working on the case, and if they were caught talking about it or spreading rumors about it, they would get a 2-week suspension. And this is the way the police chief was trying to put the kibosh on rumors spreading and media leaks.
And he was concerned about media leaks. He was very straightforward about that they had evidence that they weren't releasing to the public. So they were holding some of the evidence close to their vests. They didn't have a suspect, but they definitely had a person of interest, and that was Vicky Yarbrough. And I'm sure some of you think, well, how could a mother be a suspect in her daughter's disappearance? But well, we cover stories like this, and it's quite possible. A lot of times someone becomes a victim of someone they know. As time goes by, another suspect shows up.
There is a man named Oscar McKinley Kearns. He goes by Mike, so we're just going to call him Mike. Mike went to the Holy Trinity Lutheran Church with Vicky and Lee at the time. He was involved in Sunday school and vacation Bible school. They had a common interest in horseback riding. So it's possible that he might have been at the stables when Lee was doing riding lessons. He lived a little more than a mile away from Lee and Vicky. Now you're thinking, well, what does this guy have to do with anything? Well, after this disappearance, it was 1993, Mike kidnaps a Memphis teenager and he rapes her. This teen was 15 years old and he dumps her off, right?
He used a ruse. He was offering to give her a ride. He said he was going to take her to school, but he took her somewhere else and raped her.
For this rape, he was sentenced to 24 years in prison with 16 years suspended. So this essentially is an 8-year sentence and then the rest is suspended, so he'll be paroled. But he ends up serving less than half of an 8-year sentence. So he's out 3.5 years, almost 4 years, for abducting a teen, raping her, and dropping her off. I know drug dealers that spend more time in prison, but, you know, we got our priorities. After he gets out of prison, he then abducts a couple, rapes the woman, and lets them go. This will actually get him a lot more time. And he was convicted in March of 2000, and he's actually scheduled to be released next year. So, wow.
Yeah, 2019.
Feeling good about this by this man, and he's spent less time in jail than I'm done with him. But the MO kind of fits here. He is targeting younger women. He is a sexual predator. He's a pedophile. Lee was 13. It is said on the first attack that he abducted the girl from her home, but it was more of a ruse thing. It wasn't like he broke in. So if you want to fit this into Lee's disappearance, you can imagine, if you will, he shows up, he's waiting for Lee's mom to leave the home, and he knocks on the door. Possibly Lee lets him in, or he barges in. He goes to attack her. Lee fights, and so an altercation breaks out. He slams Lee's head against the wall and then knocks her unconscious and then feels like he has to deal with the situation. And he takes the sleeping bag, wraps her up, and leaves with her. But that would mean that he was waiting there to do this attack. And he knew Lee's mother was going to be gone at a certain time, and she wasn't going to be coming home anytime soon. But it's a very quick action.
Well, we're talking about a time frame of an hour to an hour and a half, which is enough time for someone to attack a child and make off with them, I would say.
Yeah. And being that the initial reports say that the investigators thought that the blood was fairly fresh, we know that this attack happened recently. Now, I looked up how fast blood dries, and depending on the temperature, depending on the humidity, a lot of different factors, it can be anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. Well, we know it was kind of cold and it's pouring rain, so the blood could have stayed wet longer. Now, that doesn't mean hours longer. It probably means 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes longer. But typically, blood dries in around an hour, depending on the amount of it. So if you have a puddle, obviously, it's not going to dry as fast. If you have a smear, it'll dry faster, just like any other fluid. We know that whatever happened probably happened that morning. But did it happen in this hour and a half window that Vicky was at work?
Yeah, that's one thing that I think should be kept in mind, is not to get caught up on this blood, the state of the blood, because it doesn't mean anything. Just because it looks like it hadn't coagulated or skinned over yet doesn't mean anything to me. And I'm not going to let that determine who I think is the best suspect in this case, because as you said, temperature, conditions, I mean, there are too many variables with all of that. You've laid out what this suspect is like, and he has a record, and he certainly could be someone that Lee might let into her home if he came by and had a ruse of maybe something's going on with his car or he needs to get out of the rain, whatever it is. Isn't that possible?
Well, yeah. Your mom called me. She told me to come pick you up. Just friends and family. There's all kinds of excuses they can make.
At the time in 1992, this wasn't someone who would be considered a suspicious person, right? He was very involved in that church.
Yeah. And he hadn't been arrested for these rapes or anything until years later.
Yeah. It wasn't until 93 that he raped someone where he was arrested and convicted for it. So a great suspect. And I think as I had read about this case, a lot of people really believe that Mike Kearns is responsible for Lee's disappearance.
And Vicky even says that after the disappearance, Mike brought her a photo of Lee. And at the time, she didn't think much of it. She thought, oh, well, that's nice. You had a photo of my daughter. But all we're getting is what she's saying. I feel like she's the one that's roped him into this case.
Roped him in.
Now, Mike has refused to cooperate with any investigation about the disappearance of Lee Ochi. He will not speak to investigators, and his lawyer has turned away any possible interviews. If they had collected any sort of DNA evidence at the time, well, they could pull DNA from Mike and possibly match that up, being that he's in prison. But again, that was 1992 and DNA wasn't quite a thing yet. So unless there was some sort of mix in the blood and other things, I don't know if they could ever track it back to this guy.
And nothing has come from the evidence that's useful in nailing down a suspect. The police have been very, very careful with their wording. And they have said they don't have a suspect. They just have persons of interest. So we've gone over Mike Kearns. And as I said, he seems to be a very popular suspect as far as the public's concerned, the armchair detectives. But we need to go back because there's Vicky and there's her husband, Barney.
Well, let's do Barney first. Barney was the stepdad. At the time, Lee was, I don't know if she was dating, but she was friends with a boy named Jordan, who was, I think, 11 years old at the time. So he was younger than Lee. And Jordan has been interviewed. I've actually read a lot of his comments online. He's very open. He seems like a little bit of a tortured soul, but I hope he's doing okay. But he says that at the time, he got the impression, or Lee just came out and said, that she was afraid of her stepfather. It's possible that he abused Lee. The police will actually say that he admitted to abusing her, but did not give any detail about what that abuse entailed, whether it was spankings or a slap or whatnot. There are rumors that Vicky and Barney were abusive, but again, these are rumors. These aren't anything that we can really establish. But school children that went to the middle school with her did report seeing that she had like black eyes and bruises.
So one of her classmates said that when they asked Lee about her black eyes, Lee responded that a horse apple fell and struck her in the face.
And this is a hedge apple, or I guess it kind of looks like a crab apple. So it's a big, heavy fruit looking thing. But what a ridiculous, like, excuse. I don't buy it.
Well, people that are abused can have difficulty talking about it and will come up with other stories about why they would have bruises or black eyes.
Yeah, and that's why I truly think that was an excuse and not the truth.
But according to Donald Ochi, Vicky Yarbrough, his ex-wife, had a temper. He also seemed to indicate that Lee and her mother had a strained relationship.
I don't know if this goes beyond mother-teenage-daughter issue, but anyone looking at this case is going to analyze any sort of conflict now. But when I look at this case, the time frame for Vicky going to work and then coming home abruptly, a little out of the ordinary to me. I don't know why somebody would drive all the way to work if they're that concerned and then drive right back home. Also, the attack happened in such a short time frame. It's a little unbelievable to me.
Her work wasn't that far away, so it was, I think, 10 to 15 minute drive. And then the grandmother, who was Donald's mother, was about 5 minutes away. Now, Vicky said that she called, apparently, and asked the grandmother to come over to check on Lee, but Vicky beats everyone there. And then the next people to get there are the grandmother and Barney Yarbrough. It's kind of strange that supposedly she calls the grandmother and the grandmother's told, hey, you need to check on Lee because I can't get a hold of her. Maybe the grandmother took her time to get there, but I mean, she was just 5 minutes away. So it's kind of hard to place that, I guess. But it is suspicious that she calls, doesn't get a hold of her daughter, and immediately thinks something's wrong. But I'm sure many people out there would say, maybe she has that motherly instinct and just knows something's wrong.
Then people have an issue with how long it took her to call 911. I already brought this up earlier, but I personally didn't see 10 minutes as a big deal. But if you saw blood, I think that that's an alarm bell. I think that's going to push the pace a little bit.
You would think it would, but Vicky explains it as she went all over the place, into the backyard, throughout the whole house. She really, really looked for her daughter and couldn't find her. But I think most people would have called as soon as they saw the blood.
Again, she didn't have a cell phone on her to run around and call with. So it's either a corded phone or possibly a cordless phone. So I kind of give her a pass on the 10 minutes to call 911. Now, I will admit to you, Aaron, that when we initially went into this case, I was firmly in the Mike Kearns camp, but have changed my mind. And it's this next piece of evidence that really blows me away. And that is the bloody nightgown in the hamper.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Why would somebody put a bloody nightgown or bloody article of clothing into the dirty clothes basket?
Well, they've asked Donald Ochi about it, and according to him, his ex-wife was a bit of a neat freak, and it's quite possible that she put that in the hamper, because that's something she would do, is put dirty clothes in the hamper. She kept things picked up, kept them neat.
Now, if she would have said that she came home and found the bloody nightgown and just inadvertently picked it up and threw it in the hamper, I might have bought this. But the fact that it was already in the hamper and she does not claim that she has any knowledge of how it got there, I got problems.
And don't forget, the bathroom showed signs of a cleanup. So someone went in there, maybe washed their hands, and then tried to wipe the countertops off. Although when the detectives were checking out the bathroom, they saw a pink residue, as if someone had tried to wipe the blood off, but it didn't all come off. It mostly came off, but the blood left behind was pink from being diluted with water.
This doesn't look good. I just assume that if somebody broke into the house or was led into the house, even if they had intended to kidnap the child, if they got into an altercation and then ended up attacking the child, they might have just left her there and ran away, knowing that they stuck around and then tried to clean up, threw bloody clothing in a hamper. Things don't compute for me. But the bloodhounds are said that they didn't hit upon the car. They didn't hit upon any trails outside the house. But is it because of the rain? Also, that sleeping bag was missing. So I think we can use our imaginations on how they got Lee's body or unconscious body out of the house without trailing blood everywhere.
Well, that's the question. We can look through this case. We can add up the evidence and say that the mother looks like the best suspect, but we still don't have Lee's body. And it's really a question of where she could have gone to, given the time frame that we know Vicky went to work and then came back. Some people say, well, maybe she dropped the body off either on the way there or on the way back. But with the dogs not really hitting upon the car, then that kind of brings up a question of, well, if she didn't take her in the car, then how couldn't they have found her body? I mean, she couldn't have gone far, right?
That's the thing. And they did search the wooded areas around the place. So I don't think she's able to sneak a body out after she's reported the crime. So I think you have to have disposed of it on your way to work.
People that lived in the area and knew this family, knew the Yarbroughs, knew Leochi, they said that at the time they were redoing a creek that ran behind the Yarbrough house. It was very soon after that limestone rock was being dumped in there. So a lot of people believe that she could have taken Lee's body and put it into that creek and obscured it. And then it ended up being covered by a lot of rock.
That's the theory, at least. I think with the amount of rain and everything else, the body could have washed away. And then maybe she went back and found it and disposed of it more properly. I don't know. That's the question, is how did she get Lee out of there? And that's where obviously police detectives and prosecutors don't have an answer to that question either. Otherwise, they would have moved on this case.
The detectives have gone over areas that were initially searched. They've gone over areas that were suggested to be possible locations of Lee's body, and they've continually come up empty. So it's not as though they're just sitting on their hands, and they have not closed the case.
In September of 1993, about 14 months after the disappearance, an 18-year-old local farmer found a human skull in his soybean field. It only had four teeth. Of course, they automatically think, well, who's the most famous missing person in this town? And that's Leochi. They take the skull and they examine it, but only using four teeth, it's a little hard to determine identification. And they had contracted out a forensic dentist to look at the skull and look at the teeth, and they determined that it is Leochi. The newspapers and everybody break this news saying, you know, Leochi's remains found, da-da-da-da-da. Meanwhile, Lee's mother actually says, do you have her current dental records? And at the same time, Lee's mother has hired a private detective also to help with the case. They realize that they're not using her current dental records, and they have her primary dentist send those over, and it's found out that this is not Lee's skull, and it actually belongs to a 27-year-old woman named Pollyanna Keith. This looks bad because you're mistaking a 13-year-old skull for a 27-year-old woman who went missing just months before. So after this discovery and misreporting, of course, Vicky and Donald are very upset and feel that the entire investigation has been somewhat botched, but they feel it's been botched for different reasons. Vicky feels it's been botched because they don't even have the current dental records for Lee. Donald thinks it's been botched because they didn't lock down the crime scene initially, and then every step of the way, he sees a lot of missteps. He sees a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, in a way, it's not so different from the JonBenet case where they didn't lock down that scene either. And it's because you have detectives coming in with a bias. They're already coming in saying the girl has been abducted and so we need to help the mother out. But really, when detectives show up, they should come in unbiased and just try to investigate. And to do that properly, you have to lock down the scene. You need to lock it down and make sure that everything is preserved.
They actually say, we couldn't throw these people out of house and home. And all I got to say is, yeah, you can. We see them do it to a lot of other suspects, including Stephen Avery. They lock down the scene and they prevent anyone from entering it. They have that power.
Yeah, what's important here? What's the priority? It should be this 13-year-old girl that's missing. But yeah, it's a dissatisfying end, or at least for now, they don't have the answer. They don't know where Lee went. I think most would agree that Lee died. And when you listen to her father talk, it seems like he really believes that someone struck Lee's head into the doorframe and that maybe they didn't even realize that she was going to die. Or at least that's what it seems to be, right, Justin? I mean, that this could have been an accidental death or a death that resulted from a fit of anger, which could suggest the mother. But again, we don't have all the answers. We can just use our educated guesses here and say, well, if you have a possible cleanup and you have bloody clothing put into the hamper and the body being hidden, that all suggests to me someone who wanted to get away with it because they would be known as a great suspect, which is usually someone who's very close to the victim and who's closer than the mother who cares for her on a daily basis.
I've actually found that most of the internet and people that know the family all feel that Vicky is the prime suspect and don't look at the Mike Kearns fellow as a suspect. They just don't see the connection there. Mike's been somewhat disregarded by Donald and other family members because they say that he was nowhere near the residence. He was out of town at the time of the disappearance, but I haven't been able to substantiate that at all with any of my reading. Simplest explanation is Vicky. I actually think they have more evidence against her than the other case we just covered with Garrett Phillips. I think there's more things there. You have a better timeline there. So kind of confused why sometimes we see law enforcement go after certain suspects, but not others.
So we've said that we both believe that Vicky is the primary suspect here. She had the means to do this. The time frame worked for her, and it was easy for her to just drive off to work and then come back and act like something happened while she was gone. But I mean, really, she could have put up the garage door and turned the light on. She could do that.
Or she could just say it. I mean, she could say whatever she wants.
Right. And we just have to take her at her word because she's the first one there. She was the last one there and the first one there. And so all of this is under her control. As far as us not being able to say for certain, it's just we don't have the body. We don't know what happened to her body. And I know that Donald has talked at length about that. He really wants his daughter's remains found so that he can have a proper burial. And he's also very angry. He wants whoever murdered his daughter to be brought to justice. I believe that there's a great chance that her body is still in the area. And just because they didn't find it doesn't mean it's not there. We've covered a number of cases where a body is found later in the very area that was searched multiple times. So it's not really a surprise that they didn't find her body, but it's possible that her body was taken in the car. I buy that. I mean, if it was put into a sleeping bag and then transported, or she could have been placed somewhere in the area. There was construction going on in the area in multiple areas. So take your pick. But it's just dissatisfying because you have a young girl who I would say lost her life and her body's never been recovered. So again, it's not about closure though. It's about getting answers. You can't say it enough. When you can't find somebody, then I'm not even sure you can grieve properly when you don't have a body. And it's a big thing for people when they can't find their loved one. That burial is really important to people. It's it's culturally very important to us, isn't it, Justin?
Exactly. That's the thing, is parents want to have closure. They want to know what happened. Obviously, justice may not prevail, but at least they can get the satisfaction of knowing that their daughter has been laid to rest. For Vicky to be so concerned about her daughter, and she actually says that she feels that Lee might still be alive to this day, but shortly after the abduction, she moved away. So it's just one more knock, one more check mark in a box that shows that her actions are somewhat questionable.
Currently, Vicky lives with her parents in Tecumseh, Michigan, and Donald is remarried and has a family. Since Lee Ochi has never been found, I'd like to read the description. I don't know how useful this is since it's been so many years, but Lee went missing August 27th, 1992. Her name is Lee Marine Ochi. She went missing from Tupelo, Mississippi. At the time, she was 4'10", 95 pounds. She had hazel eyes, blonde hair, and both of her ears were pierced, and she did wear glasses. She has a strawberry birthmark at the base of her head, small scars on her right leg, and bumps on the skin of both of her knees. She has a lazy left eye, and anyone who has information on Lee's disappearance should contact the Tupelo Police Department in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries, and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.